Welcome to Ballyhoo Farm, a podcast for fiber producers and artists. As always, I'm your host, Madeline Norman. Today is the last show of 2015. Can you believe it? Today's show features an interview with Kelly Yates, who is the executive director of the Kentucky Sheep and Goat Development Office, as well as being the editor for Hoofprint Magazine and an all-around great gal to work with. I'm going to talk with her about the benefits of joining your state association or any other producer's association. I personally didn't join anything until this year, but I have definitely found that it is of value to me, and I would highly recommend any of you out there who are thinking about getting into small ruminants, or if you are just starting out, even if you're experienced, your associations can have a lot to offer. Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. I'm the executive director for the Kentucky Sheep and Goat Development Office. Essentially, I tell everybody that I'm a volunteer manager. There's only two paid staff, me and the office manager, and we're part-time. So we rely heavily on volunteer assistants across the state to do what we do. But the Sheep and Goat Development Office is a nonprofit. It started in 2007. And we are charged with promotion and marketing and education for the sheep and goat industries in Kentucky.
Does every state have a similar office?
Not necessarily. There are a few states across the country that have that, but they might look differently. For instance, like Ohio is a shared time between the Ohio Sheep Improvement Program and the Kentucky Farm Bureau. We're very lucky in the fact that we have our own entity to do these kind of things.
And did that occur through lobbying? Is it because there's enough small ruminant producers in the state to warrant that? Or how did we luck out like that?
There are definitely enough in the state to warrant that. How it got started was through the Kentucky Ag Development Board. There was a grant that was received, and the nonprofit was started from that funding. With the Ag Development Board and that Ag Development money that came through, Kentucky has been fabulous at using that money to really go back into the ag industry and develop that infrastructure. And when that happened, there were several other commodity groups that had done that same thing. And so it was really easy for this office to get started because Kentucky's agriculture had already started that trend of doing those different commodity groups. You know, the pork producers, Avalon and Cattlemen's, and the grain growers and soybean people. And, you know, there's several different groups that have their own development offices like that.
We do have lamb at Incredible Food Show.
Yes. This past year, the 2015 Incredible Food Show, was the first time that we have been able to participate in that, and it was a phenomenal experience. We had several of our members that had their own booths throughout the event, and then the development office had one for ourselves. We were able to provide educational information as far as like lamb and goat meat, and how to cook those, and give out recipes, and talk about where to find it across the state. And we had thousands of people come through and take that information. And we also did a lamb cooking contest in conjunction with Sullivan University there at the Incredible Food Show on the Heritage stage. And that was wonderful. As we had, I mean, every seat was packed. People were coming to watch the contest, and they got to learn about the American Lamb Board and finding lamb across Kentucky and how to cook it, and the Sullivan students got to show off their skills in doing that. It was a lot of fun.
Great. We need to find something similar for fiber.
Yes. Well, hopefully the Fiber Festival, you know, is kind of hitting that niche market, allowing people to take advantage of that as well. I know that we've had lots of repeat customers over the several years that come just to our festival to hit specific people. So I know at least that part's working. And we do have ladies that go down to, since you were just as a North American, they have ladies there that demo spinning, which is always a huge hit.
The development office was involved a little bit in forming the Kentucky Sheep and Fiber Festival, was it not?
Yes, it was. The Kentucky Sheep and Wool Producers Association is the biggest sponsor, along with the Lexington Parks and Rec Department, for that event. And so since KSWPA is part of the development office, that's kind of how that came through. And part of my position when I was hired was to be the co-director for that festival, to work with KSWPA to put that festival off. And so I've done that for 3 years, and we just now hired another lady, Sarah Beth Perno from Winchester, to be the festival coordinator, and that's going to be her designated job. So all year long, she's going to be working just on the fiber festival. So we're pretty excited about that. She has a fiber background. She had a fiber shop. She's got her own flock of sheep that she does all of her fiber stuff with. So she's very much in the fiber world more than I was. So I think she'll be able to take the festival and go in a great direction.
She's awesome, and I'm so looking forward to the festival growing. We've gotten great feedback, both from vendors mm-hmm. and customers who have stopped going to other festivals to wait for ours.
Absolutely, and I think we finally kind of figured out really how to make that work. And we came into it, we never wanted to be necessarily like a Maryland 5 festival. And I think over the 7 years, the upcoming will be the 7th one, I think we have finally figured out the perfect number, you know, of vendors and like the perfect mix. And it takes a while to get there, you know. You don't want a whole lot of repeat stuff, and you want new people to be able to come in. And of course, you've got all that, you know, you've got your experienced ones that need to be there because they're the core, you know, the background
right.
of it. And I think we're doing better with our contests. We're kind of starting to see that. And our contests are, the fleece contest was crazy this past year. Like, you know, it's really flown. I think we have like 300 fleeces in the contest. I mean, there's fleeces everywhere. Because we walked down the aisleways, they were everywhere. So, you know, that's getting better. And promotion-wise, I think we're getting better. You know, I have buses of guilds coming in, which is phenomenal. We're pretty excited. I think Fairvest's really going to be able to take it and really hone in on those different areas and make those better so that we have room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have a plan to grow.
Awesome.
But it's the third weekend in May in Lexington.
It happens the same week as the Bluegrass Sheepdog Trial, which is always fun.
Yes, we always try to do that in conjunction. So we're always, that weekend, like, we're always running down talking to the dog people and they're like, okay, winter contest, we need to trying to coordinate dates and that kind of stuff. But it's great because Parks and Rec does a shuttle in between both events. So you can come to the Fiber Festival and then jump on the shuttle and go down and watch the dog trials for a while and then come back and, you know, get dinner or get lunch and buy all your fiber needs. Just make a whole day out of it, make a whole weekend out of it if you want.
So what other programs are available through the state?
Through the development office, because we do marketing and promotion and education, we always have a variety of things going on. Our biggest focus for the past 2 years has been on producer education. We've done some consumer education. We do that throughout the year simply because you can't just have producers and not have consumers. So we've been trying to focus on producers because there's been such a huge growth in the sheep and the goat industries in our state just within the past 5 years that we've had lots of new producers on board, and it's been a struggle for them to put all the information together that they need to make successful small ruminant birds and flocks.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been trying to do education through the Small Ruminant Profit School in an effort to show people how to make a profit with their herd and then team them up with an experienced mentor that can help them take the education from the class and more quickly implement that and kind of help them figure out what direction they need to go to become profitable and then take the information from the class and develop that into their own plan. And when you go through a class, you pick and choose is important to you, and then you figure out how to do that. So that mentor is supposed to help do that more quickly. So that, I think it's been a huge success. The number of the people in the class this year just exploded. I actually ran out of materials. I couldn't take anybody else. And so, but yeah, I've had more new mentors, which, you know, you're one of those, which is great. We should be able to really help people go in the right direction. And then as far as consumer education, we have the Kentucky Sheep and Fiber Festival, which is awesome on the fiber end because we can help lots of people in a great setting with lots of wonderful experienced vendors and workshop instructors. And then on the meat end, we do like the state fair, and we do the Incredible Food Show and that type of thing. So we do tastings and consumer education throughout the state. That's kind of been our major focus, and I think that will continue for the next 2 or 3 years because whoever we've educated at first with Small Room Profit School, they're probably going to be in a position here in the next year or two to get some more advanced education and kind of take their herds and their flocks to a different level. And then obviously the consumer education will grow. We've got all kinds of great dreams and plans we've been working on this month We want to make our 2016 priorities. And
I noticed before I even started with the mentor program, for some reason, I always end up answering the educational questions, whether it's people just starting out or people who haven't even started yet. Actually, I just had an experience, this small world of small ruminants. A couple that had spoken to me at Kentucky Sheep and Fiber this year were thinking about getting Shetlands because they loved mine so much. Ended up picking up a starter flock of Shetlands and Icelandics, and then this fall decided that since they were breeding the son, they needed to get rid of the mother, and I ended up trading with them. And when I got out there, I said, I know these sheep. They were from another lady that I know in Kentucky who raises Shetlands as well, and she and I had traded stock before. I was able to give them the flock history and also help them with a little bit of flock health, hoof trimming and things like that, shearing, handling, just basic things. They had goats, so they were familiar with small ruminants, but sheep are a little bit different.
Right.
It's just funny how things come, I guess, full circle like that. One of the sheep that they have is one from my original flock. It was one of my first homebred lambs, and I was like, oh, I know her.
That's so funny. Well, that's great. I mean, I think that is so critical to people's success, is being able to work with people like you and get that kind of information and get that kind of help. And I think that's just fabulous that you can do that. And those, I mean, those people will remember that from now on.
Yeah, anytime I sell animals, of course, I offer to mentor the people and say, if you have any questions, contact me, because it's good for the animal as well as helping them learn. Obviously, if they're successful, they're going to continue doing it. And if they have some failures that could have been prevented, that sucks. So I want to be there to help as much as I can. But the thing that I notice is how many small, I mean, really small producers, just a couple of sheep, maybe one sheep, people get into it and don't have any education and don't have a mentor. And I don't think they even know where to look. When I started out, I don't know if you had the Small Ruminant Profit School yet or not. I wouldn't have thought to join. And in fact, I didn't join any associations until this year. When Sonia badgered me to do so, because I didn't understand what the benefits were. So could you talk about that a little bit?
I can definitely do that. And I'm kind of the same way. I mean, as far as like our cattle and that kind of stuff, like we didn't join the Cattlemen's Association for a long time. And my dad has been a Kentucky Sheep and Wool Producers member for years. Maybe, I don't even know, since the beginning. And so through that, probably kind of what helped me get this job, kind of kept me connected with people. And I think that's the biggest benefit of being a part of a state association, is just being able to network. Even those people that you just talked about, if they had been members within the group, they probably would have known people earlier, you know, that had the kind of breed that they were looking for, or they would have been able to think about, you know, some breeding options. You know, well, I've heard this person has good animals, I'm going to call them, or I can call somebody and check on somebody else, or any of that kind of stuff. The networking, to me, is the biggest key to being a part of those associations, because everybody knows something.
Yeah, true.
I just know that something that you need just at that point in time, or know how to send you somewhere. So I think, again, the networking is probably the biggest key. Now, since we have the development office as an umbrella for the Kentucky Sheep and Wool Producers and the Kentucky Goat Producers. So essentially what that means is we kind of coordinate, kind of have a central point for those two associations. So if you become a member of the Kentucky Sheep and Wool Producers, you get the benefit of getting the Hoofprint magazine every quarter out of the year. So that magazine is just for sheep and goats, and it covers the gamut of information as far as nutrition and breeding and health, and we do spotlights on people. And it also has a section in there that kind of like a newsletter for the Sheep and Wool Producers and the Goat Producers Association, so you can keep track of what they're doing and what's coming up, so that you can go to different events where you can network with people and get some education at the same time. We also have the Kentucky Sheep and Goat Management Calendar. And that calendar is designed essentially to help be a record-keeping system for you, or to assist with whatever record-keeping system you have. So in that calendar, we have all the sale dates throughout the year, so all the greatest sales. We have those locations and those times. We try to put in show information that we know of at the time that we print. So most of it's through KDA. So if you have kids, you're going to know when the district shows are and the county shows are. And we also have a due date, which to me is the best part of the calendar. So if you breed something on January 1st, it'll tell you exactly what day that your babies are coming. And it's got warming information and illness information and treatment information in there. So it's a very good resource for that. So whether you're sheep or wool or your Kentucky goat producers, they both get those items.
And it's not that expensive.
Sheep and wool producers, it's not expensive. It's $30 for a year.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a tax person, but a lot of people say they write off on their taxes. That's great, $30 for that. And as sheep and wool producers, you get a little extra kick on that. You also become a member of the American Sheep Industry, which is the oldest species-specific association in the country. They're very well established. They do legislative education and promotion activities, events. They offer grants. They do a tremendous amount of stuff. And you also get their magazine every month, which is the Sheep Industry News, just from being a member of our Kentucky Goat Producers Association. And so there's a wide variety of benefits. I think a lot of people don't join associations. Maybe one, they don't know about it. Or two, most of us like to get some kind of instant gratification, regardless of how much money we spend. Mm-hmm. So even if you buy a pack of gum in the gas station, you get to pop that gum in your mouth right then, and you get that instant satisfaction of paying $1.25 for a pack of gum.
Right.
And so when you take $30 being an association, you're going, well, what am I going to get out of this? And I think what people have to keep in mind is that $30 does not go to pay my salary or the office manager's salary. It goes directly into that association. So that association then gets to spend that money on events and activities to educate people, to network with people. They do a lot of sponsorships. They do a lot of sponsorships for kids. I mean, they buy belt buckles for shows, or they do skill-a-thon contests, or they do judging contests. They help with speeches. They're trying to put that back into the future of things as well to help current producers.
Mm-hmm.
By having those associations, it allows our development office to work with more people in order to make our industry better and grow and more stable across the state. You kind of have to look at it as a big picture when you drop that $30, is that you might not get something in your email inbox tomorrow, or you might not get something in the mail tomorrow, but you can be guaranteed that the day that you join, there is something going on that day that really is going to make your industry better, which in turn is going to affect you, you know, right there at your farm gate.
And I can't speak for other associations, but the thing that I've been really impressed with is the communication and the level of activity that actually goes on, especially from the American Sheep Industry Association. They send updates, is it every week or every 2 weeks?
Every week. This is every week.
Yeah, and there's always, I mean, it's full of stuff. Lobbying and asking for opinions and speaking to what's going on as far as policies that might affect our industry, health issues, tips on management. They send the prices for all the markets, lamb and wool.
And you'll get that information. As soon as you become a member, you're automatically put on an email list. And so we send you information. We'll send you that weekly update from ASI. We send you funding information. We send you grant information. Health information, anything that comes through to us that could benefit producers, we immediately send that out to producers. So I even had a guy join our Kentucky group from Ohio. He was like, you all are phenomenal at keeping me up to date with what's going on. And he was like, the magazine and the calendar and the email updates are far more worth the $30 that I dropped for my membership.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Thanks. No, I agree.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think just as much or more for the American Border Collie Association, and I only hear from them twice a year, I think.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you might even get tired of hearing from us.
Well, yeah, there are weeks that there's nothing in there that's really of interest to me, but the amount that I save, because it actually does affect my daily life. It has an impact on what I do and what I produce. So, like you said, it's well worth the money. It's an investment.
Absolutely.
And being connected to...
And your investment gets more, the more you want to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, I have people that complain, and part of that's their fault. these meetings are open to everybody. You know, when sheep and wool producers and goat producers meet and our development office meets, they're open to everybody. And you can come. I mean, express to me what you're looking for as a producer, and I'll show you what we have that will help you.
Kelly's very nice, super approachable. She's a great listener. So don't be afraid to walk up and say hi.
Yep, as I say, I was like, I try not to ever be meeting anybody. I don't think I have. So we got tons of resources. You call me with a question and I don't know the answer, I'll know who to call or know who to put you in contact with. And I mean, I get calls. I have literally helped people deliver lambs over the phone. I mean, that's how far things have gone. I mean, that's what I'm here for. I want to help people, and I want people to feel like getting in the sheep and goat business is a good business, and once you're in, it's a good business to stay in. So that's what we work really hard through our office to do.
And it is so important to be connected to other producers, because sheep are not a well-supported animal in the veterinary community. They don't make a lot of money, and so vets tend to kind of overlook them. So when you need help, and you need help now, you need someone you can call.
Exactly. You need somebody to help you deliver that lamp, you know, over the phone. The best way to decide whether you want to be a member or not is to go to our website, and that's kysheepandgoat.org. That's all spelled out. And you can see all the stuff that we're doing. And there's tabs for the sheep and wool producers. It's KSWPA. And the Kentucky Goat Producers, which is KGPA. Now click on those. It tells you what they're doing and what's going on. And the emails for the officers and directors for those associations are on there too. So you can email those people and ask them questions. Give your opinions or whatever you want to do. I mean, everything's very accessible. My phone number, my email is on there.
And every person that I've met in conjunction with the sheep and goat world has been extremely accessible. Uh-huh. Every single person is there to welcome you in and to help you on your path to success. I don't think there's not really a competitive spirit. People are very supportive of one another, and that's great.
Yes, so that's what I love about it. I don't have anybody, you know, that's a board or that I work with on a regular basis that tries to keep information from anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants everybody to be successful, and that's what's so great about it.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today.
Yeah. If you go to our website, on the homepage, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a list of things that are coming up here pretty quick. After January 1st, I'll update that information for the rest of the spring. I'm working on the calendar on the portion of the website. If you click on that, I'm not going to have anything there. I always put all the important things, like any events that have a flyer or something like that with it, will be on the bottom, and you can get that kind of stuff. Check that out. We'll help them out.
Great. When does the next Small Ruminants for Profit School start?
The next Small Ruminants for Profit School will start in the fall. So we are in the process of getting the funding for that and getting all that lined out. So we generally start in September. So we spend the spring and the summer recruiting people, and we train our mentors. They are trained on the program and what they expected, and then we start that in the fall. So it generally takes about 6 months to get through that class, but it's only 5 classes.
And if you guys are interested, you need to sign up as soon as it goes up, because it will fill up pretty quick.
You really do. I mean, I was amazed at how fast and how many people were interested in the class this time. So I would recommend watching that. I generally try to always get the registrations out on the website by like July. So that gives people at least two and a half months to get signed up. And if you have sheep, you can go through the UKU Profit School. Wonderful program. It's very hands-on because it's at the UK Sheep Unit. And you can check out our website. We always have those dates for that information coming up too. February 6th is the Small Ruminant Grazing Conference. It's going to be in Ashland, Kentucky. That's also going to be on our website. Go check that thing out, because they always have some really great speakers on parasite control at that event. It's totally worth going just to hear those people talk about that. So
yeah, that's an ongoing struggle. We all face it.
Yes. We all face it. If somebody tells you they don't have it, they're lying. Everybody has them. It's a matter of learning how to manage them. You're never going to get rid of them, but you've got to know how to manage them. And we cover that a lot in Small Ruminant Profit School, too.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kelly.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Is that little baby Jesus or big grown-up Jesus?
Well, 'tis the season for little baby Jesus.
Oh, I guess we should get all our holidays out of the way. Happy Thanksgiving, because I haven't seen you since before then.
Happy Hanukkah, because that's over as well.
Merry Christmas.
Joyous Kwanzaa.
A festive Festivus.
A delightful Yule.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. How was your Thanksgiving?
Fairly low key, just spent the time with my family.
I experienced my first full-blown family Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I was in charge of the kitchen.
Kind of. You had the false sense that you were in charge of the kitchen.
No, I was in charge of the kitchen, and apparently I put several noses out of joint by not asking for help. I wasn't aware that I was supposed to need help.
Of course you are. You don't know what you're doing. You've never cooked for this family before.
Excuse me, did you see that bird?
It was moist and tender.
His name was Ira, and he tasted amazing.
How do you know it wasn't a She-Ra?
Because I decided.
Oh.
Maybe next
year. You saw his giblets?
I did.
Did you make gravy from those giblets?
I did not. I know whose purse the giblets are in.
Hey, I'm the one that has two Jewish weddings next year. I'm gonna be...
You're gonna be hopping.
I'm gonna be schwitzing.
You're such a mensch.
I am.
Do you have any idea what season they're getting married in?
I do not. And it's not necessarily gonna happen next year, but...
Oh.
I'm an official member of a Sheep Breeders Association.
But you're not a member of the Kentucky Sheep and Goats Association.
No, but I did go to that grant workshop for the two of us.
Yes, what did you learn at the grant workshop?
That writing grants is a pain in the ass.
Amen.
But that there's some that are much smaller and easier to get. There's even one through the USDA that's where you can make improvements to your farm.
Oh, cool.
For like stuff like fencing or stuff like that. Like
yeah.
Simple stuff. There was some local ones that were really cool, too. There's one offered through Kentucky State. There's an education one, too, where you can apply for the grant. So, like, if we wanted to go to sheep shearing school, we can apply for it and get sheep shearing school paid for. I did find out that here in the state of Kentucky, we have K-Card, which is to help with all the grants and stuff like that, and they're fantastic.
Okay, what is this T3L? I did my cable. Are you proud of me?
T3L.
These things are not going to look anything like yours.
What
in
gay hell, Batman? Oh, you still have the late black nose. Something.
You asked something. Why does this have to be my first set of mitts? Why
because
do you hate me?
We had to teach you multiple skills in one because you don't knit them.
So did you have a happy Hanukkah?
I did. Well, I at least got to celebrate the last two nights of it.
Did you eat many sufganiyot?
I ate latkes. And I ate kugel, and I ate lox, and bagels, and schmear, and smoked whitefish, and...
With or without capers?
No capers, just onion and tomato.
Okay.
But I was really holding out for the whitefish, because there's nowhere here to get decent whitefish.
And you even had a sing-along.
I did not sing, and nor did anybody else really sing. It was more of just a small piano recital.
Of everyone's Hanukkah favorites?
Well, it was Hanukkah and Christmas favorites.
Aw.
Because it was a holiday party. It's a mixed marriage.
That's a very egalitarian thing to do.
Yes.
Well, I blew it on Hanukkah this year. I didn't get any cards sent. It just came too stinking early. I lit all but two nights. I had no presents for anybody. Your present is my love.
I was like, your presence is my present.
Right?
Since we get to see each other so much.
Oh, I hate it. Only now I have time, and now you don't.
Yay.
What have you done to me with this?
I haven't done anything. It's your pattern.
It's not my pattern. You chose it. All right. Let's remind our listeners what we're doing.
With this particular project?
Yes.
We're knitting a matching pair of fingerless mitts that are cable.
It's my first cable project, but I have not used six DPNs.
Fun, isn't it?
No. No, it's not.
And we're making them out of the Valet Black Nose yarn that I've got when I was ordering some stuff from Blacker Yarns.
I can't tell if this is a knit or a purl anymore because it's all twisted. Can you put your sparkly alpaca down for like one gay minute and help me?
Well, I've been helping you for more than one gay minute.
Okay, so we're doing these Valet Black Nose mitts, and you're making me use six needles.
And it's magic.
And it's not magic.
You don't have to make the same pattern as me. I just thought it'd be fun to knit the same thing.
You couldn't have started me on cables with, like, a scarf, though?
No, we're beyond that.
Did you just do these for me?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me if it was a knit or a purl.
They were all knit. They were all knit.
I'm sorry, I had doggies in my lap.
I was like, you were playing with doggies.
Not so much playing as, you know, greeting in a calm and dignified manner.
Getting accosted by.
Your mitts are half done?
My first mitt's probably third to half somewhere.
And because of finals, mine isn't done at all. I had two rows.
For like 2 months.
I had school. Brick is spinning his copper Angelina.
Yeah, it's like a chocolate alpaca with copper colored Angelina.
That you got at a wool gathering.
Yes, which is, I spun maybe like half an ounce of it and then just left it alone. And I haven't touched it in forever.
I mean, you haven't been busy or anything.
No, not at all. Should we probably tell the listeners to forgive the puppy noises in the background?
Oh, maybe. I'm sure all of our listeners are animal lovers.
Well, I mean, we've had cats.
We have.
And chickens.
And sheep.
And dogs. Have we gotten to horses yet?
Is it time to have the horses on the podcast?
Perhaps we should get goats or something.
Only if they're Angora.
Could we get a cashmere goat?
Yes.
I actually haven't even talked to you about how my little sheepies are doing.
They're wonderful.
And
they've
how they're
made
fitting in.
They've made the other sheeps in their pasture more friendly. Cinder loves to play with Daisy. They actually groom each other through the fence.
Cinder and Daisy do?
Yeah.
See, I knew that I made a good choice with her.
Well, it's because your sheep grew up with livestock guardian dogs, and none of my sheep had been around them.
Well, but that'll hopefully help with your sheep.
Exactly. Dorothy is way more friendly. I finished spinning that horrible, horrible peacock. That will be special order only from now on.
You brought it upon yourself.
It was, well, hi, cheerleader.
I was like, per my idea, but, you know.
That's a great idea every step of the way. And then when I started spinning it, why are you doing that?
Well, I didn't know why you were doing it in a chain fly. That's
I just thought it would hold better, because it would be locking on itself. I might give it a shot way down the road when I have nothing else to spin with standard issue plying. It looks like I have cables starting in different spots.
You might. Come on, cable master, you can do it.
I love how you throw me in the deep end and then just say, well, you'll love me later.
This is an easy cable pattern.
Okay, yeah. Because things on DPNs are always easier than things knit flat.
Wouldn't you rather have something more practical out of this yarn? You would not want to wear this yarn as a scarf at all.
I'm telling you, this is not going to look anything like yours.
Well, then I guess we'll just have to start them all over again.
Oh.
You learned a cable cast on?
I already learned stuff this semester. Stop trying to make me grow. Hey, Brick, you know where a great place is to spend Christmas?
Where?
Germany.
I do have some friends over there.
So do I. Maybe we should both go.
Well, actually, I think they're in the States now because they came home for the holidays.
Speaking of home for the holidays, what do you think Terry's doing?
He's going to be coming up to Kentucky to enjoy a beautiful bluegrass Christmas.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
But something tells me he's trapped in the loop in Houston and will never get out.
I just saw he ordered a whole bunch of yarn online. But yarn is one of those tactile things, and it's way better if you get it in person.
Yeah, like from Ballyhoo Farm, Terry.
Right.
Or Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium.
I hear they're open special hours just for you, Terry. Hint, hint.
Nudge, nudge.
I have to say, I'm making my mom's present out of handspun, and I'm greatly enjoying my own yarn. So, shout out to me for the good job I did.
I much prefer working out of small batch mill yarn or hand spun.
Oh, my gherkin's in a twist. Wait, I fixed it. Maybe. Did I fix it? Did I do it? This is very nice yarn, though. I mean, yes, maybe it's not like the softest handle ever, but
the yarn itself's nice to work with.
Right? It's no baby Paco Vicuña for sure, but we need another dye day.
We haven't even finished the first one.
I know, that's what I'm saying. We need another dye day so that we can. But now it's cold, so we can't put them outside.
No. I wish I'd known you were going to the woolery. I would have had you pick up some more dye.
I didn't really know I was going until we were driving past, and I was like, well, if you wanted to go, He was like, what is it? I said, it's a porn shop for fiber artists.
I'd say that's fairly accurate.
Oh, can we talk about PETA for a minute? I got my hair cut over the weekend, and the lady who cut my hair was like, is it true that you have to kill them to get the fiber? Seriously?
I saw that, the post that was going around on Facebook a long time ago, and I was just like, this is ridiculous.
Right. People should just think it through, like, logically at all.
People should educate and just ask. That's the bigger thing, is just ask. I would rather somebody ask me, be like, do you have to kill it? I'd be like, no, not at all.
Well, how does that make sense? Why would we go to the trouble and expense of raising an animal to murder it?
Just once for that one fleece. Now, sheep that are being butchered for meat, once they've reached their size or whatever.
But they don't typically produce good fiber.
It depends on the breed. Some are multi-purpose.
And it depends on the line.
Right. I mean, it's...
But regardless, I mean, the pictures that PETA shows of these animals that are absolutely mangled, the shearing would be done well before slaughter. That picture of Ryan Gosling or whoever it is holding that lamb...
I don't even remember who that was.
What did they do to it?
It's not even real.
You can't shear a lamb that small. Like, you get no usable fiber.
It's not a lamb. It's not a real lamb. It's like a prop. They made it.
And B, if that was a real animal, I can think of no process that would result in it looking like that. I'm getting this. I can't tell if it looks like anything yet, but I think I'm getting it.
I think you've got it way better than you think you do.
I hope so.
Let's review 2015. In terms of fiber and fiber production, 2015 was in some ways my best year yet, and in some ways not as productive as I would have liked. I did more festivals this year. I kind of expanded the range that I visited, and that was really good. I met some wonderful people, both other vendors and customers. That's part of the fun of it. I love meeting the other vendors and talking to them. I took that leap of faith and made this my primary source of income, which didn't work out quite the way I expected. I had been selling on Etsy mostly until this year, and last year, actually since they changed their policies, my sales had dropped dramatically to the point where I actually closed my shop for a while. After a bunch of people asking the same questions at different festivals, I thought, I really want some place to just put a repository of everything that I talk about and everything that people ask me so that I can just refer them there. I decided that a podcast was the best format for that and made the commitment to do that more frequently than I had been blogging, which was not very often. Good intentions, but then I couldn't ever find the time to sit down and write. As I was listening to podcasts in the last year, I realized that it was so much more accessible in my life and my schedule because I could listen to them on the way to and from school, which comprises the bulk of my downtime. I decided that I wanted to offer that same thing. And in researching the cost of hosting the podcast, it became apparent that it was just as cost effective to have my own website where I could have a commerce option as well as the podcast. The irony is, after shelling out all the money for the website, I have yet to make a single yarn sale through my own website, but my Etsy sales have picked back up. So you just never know. It was a good lambing season. Everybody's happy and healthy, but I didn't sell any livestock this year. I sheared for more people this year, probably not as many as I'm going to shear for next year. I got to work with more types of fiber, different breeds of wool. I met some wonderful people by doing the podcast. I've enjoyed all of my guests immensely, and I can't wait to see who we speak with next year in 2016. This year, the fiber world really embraced me openly, which has been wonderful, and I really needed the support with everything that happened at school. I'm a lot more involved, and the networking, it can be really lonely to be on a farm, to be a shepherdess or a fiber artist. We creative types tend to be somewhat reclusive, so it's nice to get together once in a while, once every couple of months at least, in a room full of like-minded people who understand my issues and my successes as well, and are able to be an outlet for
venting or a resource for education or just all around good folks to know. And in conjunction with my work with the Kentucky Sheep and Wool Producers Association, I have my very first shared byline in Hoofprint Magazine. Privileged to be asked to contribute to this article on marketing versus selling. So that's exciting. It was a year of many changes and growth, both professionally and personally, but not as much growth as I foresee happening in the next year. Holidays were quiet. New Year's is going to be pretty quiet. Just have a game night planned on New Year's Day. I'm super weird. A few years back, I attended the Tennessee Renaissance Festival. There was a booth that was selling elf ears and Vulcan ears and orc ears and all kinds of things. But it was the same company that did the prosthetics for Lord of the Rings. So you know they're good. Like, they're really high quality. They try to match your skin tone. I bought a pair of elf ears. Wore them at the Renaissance Festival. Super fun. And didn't give them another thought until the holidays. But it's kind of become this holiday tradition for me to go out in the Christmas season wearing these ears. So in recent years, I've been spotted, quote unquote, at such places as Arby's, Bass Pro Shop, I think Best Buy, a steakhouse. And the reactions that I've gotten over the years have changed drastically and been really interesting. There's more curiosity and more staring by adults than there is by kids. Kids seem to take it for granted that, of course, there's a real live elf out there somewhere. Normally, I don't dress up in any kind of holiday clothing. I'm not with anyone else who's dressed up. It's just me. And once I put my hair over top of the ears to cover the seam, you literally can't even tell. You have to do a double take. I don't wear a Santa hat. I don't wear jingle bell shoes. I'm just a normal person out in the holiday season with totally realistic elf ears. I've had adults come up to me and ask the name of the disease that caused my ears to be like that, which is kind of sad. When people ask whether they're my real ears or not, I always say yes. And then I'll do something like scratch them, wiggle them, something, pull on them, and it freaks people out. And I've learned the power of the ears well over the years. I've learned when to smile, when to chew, how the ears connect to the structure of my facial muscles. I've learned when to scratch, how to flip my hair without bending the tip or revealing the edges. If I thought about it at Halloween, I would get some liquid latex and kind of put over it so there wouldn't be a gap at all. When people ask about them, I tug on them. With great power comes great responsibility. And I am challenged every year by children with a host of questions that I have to make up answers for. And this year was the best example of that yet. Christmas Eve day, I spent at the mall. Well, at two malls. I just sat in a comfortable spot in 60-degree weather and knitted. I took a big leather-bound book with a red ribbon in it, and then I took an ostrich feather and, like, duct taped it with green duct tape to a golf pencil. Every time somebody talked to me, I would write something down. And really what I was looking to write down was every time I saw somebody do something nice in the mall. At the second mall, the only thing that really happened was a mother brought her small child up to talk to me. That's kind of interesting to me that the parents encourage their children to approach a total stranger. And they rarely interrupt our conversations. The ears make me trustworthy somehow. I have to come up with all these answers on the fly, and they challenge everything, even their own beliefs. This was the first year that I had people ask to take a picture with me. I only had a conversation with one child this year, but she made it a good one. Her mother encouraged her to come up to me, and she squinted at me and asked, "Are you an elf? Are you a real elf?" I said, "Yes, absolutely I am." And she looked at me and said, "Aren't you supposed to be little?" And I got asked that this year more than anything else. Why aren't I little? And by little, people meant like knee high. Why is everyone so sizist? What makes you think elves have to be small? She said elves had to be small. I said I was a grown-up elf, and she asked how old I was, which I didn't really have an answer for. I said, why can't there be big elves? She said, there's only one big elf. It's Buddy. And I said, but Buddy's not an elf. Buddy's a human. And then I said, why wouldn't there be some big elves and some little elves? Because big elves need to do big jobs like change light bulbs and take care of the reindeer. Reindeer are big. Who's going to harness them? The little elves can't reach. Well, she chewed this over and took it back to her mom. Then she came back to me and said, did you know that I'm from Maui? I said, do you think it's too warm for the reindeer there? And she said, no, I don't think so. I said, well, I'll tell Santa to pack a pair of shorts. She took this back to her mom. Then she came back because she forgot what I had said. And I said, I'll tell Santa to wear shorts so he won't get hot in his fur suit. And she thought for a second and said, I think he can wear pants. I think that would be okay. She told me, because I'm not little, I don't make toys. And I said, no, you're correct. She said, what do you do? And I said, I take care of Santa's reindeer. I mean, sheep, reindeer, it's close enough, right? I have to make sure that they're fed, give them all their hay, polish their harnesses, get them all ready to hitch up to the sleigh. And she bought that, for a while at least. But she wanted to know why I was there. And I said, I'm double-checking the nice and naughty list. Well, off she went, and they went shopping, and they came back a little while later, and she had more questions for me. Again, I'm not little enough, so I can't be a real elf. Am I a real elf? And she examined me head to toe. I was never more worried that those ears wouldn't stick. She told me she believes in Santa, but that her older brother doesn't, and that she's worried for him, because bad things happen when you don't believe in Santa. Which, if you consider Santa the essence of goodness, charity, and love, then absolutely, bad things happen when you don't believe in Santa. And I asked her if she was going to leave carrots for the reindeer, to which she said no, she was leaving homemade reindeer food that she had made at school. But not her school here, her school at Maui. All right. And then she argued that I wasn't an elf because I didn't know her name. I said, well, do you know my name? Well, no. But you don't know my name. You're supposed to know my name. What's my name? I said, why do you think elves know everybody's name? She said, they're supposed to. I said, Santa knows everybody's name. And she said, no, but elves are supposed to know too. And then, as every little kid does, she started with that sing song, you don't know my name. What's my name? And then she spelled it. And she said, you don't know my name. And I told her her name. And she flipped out. And then when she stopped, she said, but you don't know Alex's name. And I put two and two together real quick and said, Alex, your brother? What? It was adorable. And it's conversations like that that keep me doing it. It's the little kids in the mall on their parents' shoulders who are cranky from being in the mall and really tired past their nap time. Their eyes almost closed, and then they catch sight of me, and those eyes pop open wide, and they start tugging on their parents. I saw an elf! I saw an elf! I saw an elf! Anyway, that kind of made my Christmas Eve. But it also got me thinking, as I was sitting there in the mall, where there was a riot, not 3 days later, looking for good deeds, and thinking to myself, if I really was there to check the naughty and nice list, all these people seem unhappy. They're buying as much as they can before the stores close for Christmas, but none of them seem very happy. And none of them seem to be with their whole families, which isn't that kind of the point of Christmas? Shouldn't it be who you're with, not what you get? And I also started thinking about the ears. When do we stop believing in the things we encourage our children to embrace? Like elves and Santa. And why? Why can't we believe in magic, in trust and goodness, in imagination, and that the impossible might, even if just for a day or just for a season, become real? Why can't I be a real elf? In fact, aren't I going to be a real elf? In 2 weeks, I'm going to DC and completing my mitzvah project. I have all these hats to hand out, and I can't wait. It's still the Christmas season. It should always be the Christmas season. Giving and caring and reaching out isn't for one day or the winter months. Just something to think about. I hope you all had a Merry Christmas, and I hope you have a healthy, happy, and safe new year. School starts in 2 weeks. I'm going to take photography. I'm pretty excited about that. I got fan mail yesterday, which always shocks me. Every time somebody writes in and says how happy they are about the podcast and how much they enjoy it, I mean, I love that so much. It just blows me away. I can't believe people are out there listening. Thank you for letting me know that you are, because it keeps me motivated to churn out quality content for you. Yeah, I'm really glad that you're enjoying it, and thank you for letting me know. I loved all the comments from last week's episode. Scott is a lot of fun to talk to. He has funded his Kickstarter, he's closed down his Etsy shop, and he's getting to work on that Destiny spindle, so we can look forward to that this spring as well. Again, thank you so much to all of you who have made it a wonderful year for me, for the podcast. I am so looking forward to the new adventures in the coming year. Remember, you can find show notes and links to everybody that we've talked about, Blacker Yarns, the Kentucky Sheep and Goat Development Office, the Kentucky Sheep and Fiber Festival, and more at BallyhooFiberEmporium.com. You can follow Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium on Facebook at Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium and Instagram at ballyhoo.fiber.emporium. If you like what you've heard today, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or Podcast Republic. I'm always looking for talented people in the fiber industry to interview, fabulous prizes to give away, and fiber businesses who would like to become sponsors. If any of these sound like you, visit the contact page of the Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium website. Have a great week, a happy new year, and remember, spin everywhere.